Hi, everyone. You're listening to In the Open, a podcast by Mental Health America, where we talk all things mental health related.
Hi, guys. It's America. We're back at another episode of In the Open. And today, Teresa is not here. We love her, but she's not with us today. I have a special guest with me, Matt Gleason, who's actually been with us before, but we brought him back because we just like him. You know, he's great.
Hi, everybody. So glad to be back on the podcast. This is so much fun.
Awesome. So today, what we're going to be talking about is really supporting others and how do I help someone? You know, what does that look like? What does that even mean when we're trying to like think about how to help someone? And I don't know, Matt, have you ever been the receiver of, you know, support from someone? And can you talk about that at all? Or
sure.
Have you been on the other end where you're trying to provide support to someone?
Yes. So I've lost my brother and sister in the last few years. And my sister had mental illness and she self-medicated with alcohol. And my brother died of pancreatic cancer. And then both of my parents are still alive and they live a minute 34 seconds away from my house. But right now they could easily be in Venezuela, because as far as away as it feels. But yeah, so when my brother and sister died, my initial instinct was, because I'm very close with my coworkers at Mental Health Association Oklahoma, and my initial instinct was when my sister died, I sent a text to one of my really good friends, and I said, I don't want any calls, I don't want any texts, I don't want any emails. I want to be left alone. I'm going to cope with this. I've never dealt with this. I'm just going to figure it out on my own. I was at the airport getting ready to fly from Tulsa, Oklahoma to Amarillo, Texas, where my sister lived for the funeral. And my phone rang and it was Mike Brose, CEO of Mental Health Association of Oklahoma. And I looked at it and I debated whether to decline the call or not. Even though I always answer when Mike calls, I love you, Mike. But I looked at it and I said, okay. And this was the first person, because I'd gotten lots of texts, I got lots of emails from other people and I completely ignored them. But I clicked the answer phone and there was Mike, and he knew what was going on. And he said, I want to help. I want to help you in any way I can. And I cried and walked around the airport and talked to Mike, and I was really like being on his couch. He's a therapist. And so it really was, he was my friend. He wasn't my boss at that moment. He was my friend, Mike Brose, and offering me help at a time when I didn't think I wanted it, but I did want it. And clearly I wanted it.
Yeah.
And Mike, he called me every day while I was out. And he did the same when my brother died about a year and a half later. So if someone's going through difficulty, there is that big concern of, well, I want to help them, but do they want my help? And especially pre-COVID, it's really hard for people to be like, should I offer help? Is that appropriate?
Yeah.
Some of the instances that we've come across, you know, working for Mental Health Association of Oklahoma, is offering, we do a lot with suicide prevention. The big thing is asking someone, are you thinking about killing yourself? And then offering to help them connect to treatment, and how terrifying that is. And I know, because I've had to ask it, and it's terrifying because you don't know what their reaction is going to be.
Yeah.
Also, on the other side of that, we also do a lot with people who are experiencing homelessness and providing them a safe place to live. And this is the number one thing that people ask me about is, do I give to panhandlers? Do I, you know, what do I do? I'm worried about people experiencing homelessness. What do I do? How can I help them?
You know what's interesting, though, like about what you're sharing and the response that you had? I think it's very common for us as people to automatically want to like close ourselves in within a little wall, right? Because we want to protect our experience, really. And what comes out of that, right, is one, at the initial stage of needing support, right, when you're thinking about whether it's something very traumatic like you experienced, or I've been through a divorce. So when I started having issues with my ex-husband, I never really told anybody. And again, you kind of want to insulate yourself because in my experience, right, once you speak to somebody about it, it's like the floodgates open. And in many ways, you feel safer in your own space and your, you know, your with your walls, because you know how to manage that. And being able to move past that takes time. And even though there are phenomenal people out there that want to help you, you know, in the instance that you're talking about, which Mike, you know, Mike Bros, he's an awesome guy. I can just imagine the phone call. He's like, "What's up, brother? How can I help you?" You know, I know. he's such a good person, but there's such a connection, I think, that occurs and hopefully can occur for a lot of people where they have that one person that you're just like, "Dude, if I talk to you, I know I'm going to have to just tell you what's happening because I can't keep it in any longer." And I think we're very blessed in that occurs and that exists in, you know, in our sphere of support. But when you're looking to support somebody, and you kind of are touching on this, right, like asking difficult questions, oftentimes when we want to look at really what that process of helping somebody looks like, it really has to be based on what the person needs, right? You can't just be like, "Oh, I'm just going to show up at your door and I'm going to save the day." That's not reality, man. More than likely, I'm going to be like, "What the hell are you doing here? Like, I don't need you right now. You're stressing me out right. Even more." So, like, I think you have to be very open and be ready to accept the decision that the person is making. So in your example, when you told people, "I don't want anybody to email me. I don't want anybody to call me. I got to do this on my own." And you have to respect that. Now, within a couple of hours, days, the one person who knew he could get through to you
right.
made the call. And I think that that's something that we have to think about, right? I have several people in my life who I can do that with, but the one person that happens with is my dad. So like, if he calls me and I'm struggling, I'm like, "Take it, I gotta let it go," you know. He's the one, and it really does feel like this big release of all the crap that we're carrying. And I think another point is that the person that is receiving support has to be able to accept it, but also let people know what they need, right? What does that look like? What do you think, in terms of what Mike kind of provided for you during that time, helped you the most?
I think after Mike called, I was more open and I took other calls that were very helpful. I have a friend who, Jacqueline Cosgrove, who actually Mental Health America honored her as a journalist a few years ago at the MHA conference. She now works for the LA Times. And Jacqueline was the next person to call me. And her and Mike were with me every day and still are. But I think what Mike did was I got a lot of one calls, the one callers. "I'm so sorry this happened. This sucks." That's really what all I wanted, is what I told people. You know, "I just want to hear," you know, they're like, "What do you want me to say?" I'm like, "Just say this sucks." Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "Yeah, it does suck. That's all you can say." But what Mike did was he called me every day. Every time he called me, that's all he had to do was like dial me and my phone to ring. Like, that's all I wanted. Like, I knew, "Oh, Mike's thinking about me."
Yeah.
That's really nice. And if he had just hung up, that would have been just fine.
Yeah.
You know, obviously he didn't, but that he was thinking about me.
It's the validation piece, right? Like,
it is.
Your existence matters to me.
Right.
Yeah. It's huge. I think a lot of time people think they have to do like these humongous kind of things to show that they support you, to help you through whatever. And the reality is, like, both professionally and personally, I think in the long run, the little things make a difference. The fact that I can call you or, you know, send you a stupid meme because I know you're going to find some happiness in it, even if the world sucks for you right now. But one of the things I think a lot of people struggle with is that first step in being able to be like, hey, Matt, what do you need from me? Because you have to be prepared for the answer, right? If they tell you, dude, I don't want anything, then you're like, okay. When you do, you know, let me know. Or you can just simply be like, I'm going to follow up with you like in a week, man. That's, if that's cool, I'm going to do that. And you have to be able to be responsive, I think. And if the person, you know, I'm a solver. So I know in one of the other sessions that Teresa and I have recorded, she talks about like the need where she needs to cry, right? And I'm like, dude, if you were crying, I would be like, what can I do to make that stop? Like, what's happening in your life? And what can I do? You need me to do something. What I have come to understand about myself is that I have to ask that question. It's like, do you want me to just sit here next to you and listen to you and not say a thing? Do you want me to give you suggestions? Do you want me to go and pick you up some dinner? You know, because my mind goes overboard and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to be able to do this and do that. And it's like, you can't. You have to have your realistic expectations of how you can support somebody wherever they are in their journey, right? So when you're talking about like the death of your siblings, dude, that's like one of the hardest things I think you'll ever go through. But for some people, my struggle isn't related to death, and it's about me just trying to figure out what the hell's happening with my mind and my emotions, especially right now, right? Where everything's just kind of, I feel like it's just been thrown in the dryer and it's like, go at it. Just tumble around there and figure out, you know, how you're going to just get straight up. And it's like, what? Like, when is this going to stop? Because I just want to get out. I think that's the place where a lot of people find some difficulty, right? I don't know. Do you think that that's the case?
Yes, I 100% agree with you. I love the dryer. I totally feel like I'm in a dryer and I want the tumble cycle to please end.
Yeah, dude, just like stop.
Just every day. You know, and to carry it forward, you know, the dryer sheet, there are dryer sheet moments where I can smell, you know, I can stop and I smell the dryer sheet, even though I'm tumbling.
Yes. And you're like, oh, this is great. And then you're like, oh, forget it. And you just keep moving and you're like, what's happening? So imagine if there was somebody that's like, let me just open this and I'm just going to pop you out of here so that you can get on with whatever you need to, you know?
Yeah, no, I love that. That makes, I'm totally stealing that.
Go for it, go for it. And asking for help, I'm not good at it. I'm not good at it at all. And receiving it is even harder, right? To be like, dude, I actually do need help. Damn it.
Exactly.
So what's like the best way that you have approached asking for help?
I don't have a problem asking for help. I'm always in need of help.
That's awesome.
I think I've never been in most 98% of my life. I've never been afraid to ask for help because I know that's how solutions are met. But, you know, going back to the death of my sister, and I worked for Mental Health Association Oklahoma, and every day I'd been talking about being transparent and asking for help is you have to do this. And people were like, you have to go to grief counseling. You have to go to grief counseling. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't want to. It sounds scary. I just neck deep in grief right now. Why would I want to fully submerge myself?
Yeah, exactly. You want me to go wade in that pool? I've already been like just swimming in it.
I know, but begrudgingly, I did grief therapy. I'm a people pleaser, so I do this weird thing where I tend to want to make the therapist feel that they're helping me.
Oh, I get you. Yeah. That's very common. It's like, I've made great strides. I've changed my life since we met last week. Yeah.
America, where we were just talking about Mental Health America's amazing screenings, mental health screenings, and how freeing that is to have a screening that you can do, and it can say, look, here's where you are, you need to reach out for help. And I wish I had done that after my sister died for the depression scale. I wish I had done that because I just dismissed what I was feeling as grief.
Yeah.
And I didn't see it as depression. And even though I've dealt with depression now that I know what depression is and what it is and how it feels and I'm diagnosed.
But that's very common.
Oh, Matt. I know. Most definitely. But it wasn't until after my brother called me and he said, look, they think it's a tumor. They think it's pancreatic. It's maybe spread to my liver. And the very next day I called Lucinda Morty, who is my dear friend, and she still answers the call for help from Mental Health Association Oklahoma. And I called her and I said, look, it's real bad. I know that I'm spiraling in an epic way. I need help and I need to figure out how to get into therapy right now. And most importantly, I need to figure out how I can medicate myself because all the lights were out, man. Like I was in darkness.
That's amazing though, that you had that much insight, right? Because I don't know that a lot of people do really when they're at their darkest, like you're talking about. It's hard to like open the blinds and be like, peek out a little bit, like is there any way for me to get help here?
Right.
And because of the discomfort that exists in that space of asking for help, you know, you're more than likely going to just shut the blinds and be like, nah, forget it. And then, you know, time passes and that's where I think a lot of issues get worse, because we just leave it, just let it exist as it is, and you're like, holy crap, a month has passed, like what happened? I love the fact that you have all of these people in your life and they're knowledgeable, right? I think we're lucky because we're in that space.
Exactly.
But most people are not knowledgeable about this. There is this point where the first immediate reaction is like, I don't know what to say. I'm sorry, you know, and that's okay. I think people have to be comfortable in just hearing that and being able to say, I don't know what to say. I want to be able to help you. I just need you to help me think through how that can look like. I think that's the most genuine answer that somebody can provide without you want to endeavor to create like this next year schedule to help them move through everything. And that's not reality, right? Even though that's what would happen in my case, that'll be like, well, I've set up a schedule for you to actually go see, you know, because I'm just a linear thinker and a very solution focused person. You know, when you think about these folks that you've had in your life and their ability to be able to translate what their knowledge is into being able to provide you support, I think it's important to just think about what happens when the person that, you know, you're trying to help, for example, doesn't have a clue that they may need help. What does that look like? You know, it from your personal and professional experience, what does that look like at all?
I don't know. That's a really tough question. I'm going to flip that back on you.
Matt, we're supposed to do this together.
You're the mental health professional. I'm a former journalist. I just love you. You have so much insight. That's the trouble with you wanting to interview somebody who does podcasts, because I want to flip the podcast and
like,
interview
wait.
You.
Let me ask you this question. You know, I don't even remember what I asked you. Now you have totally flipped it. It's like, what? I'm supposed to respond to this too? No. You know, I think I remember some of the points in my lifetime, right? I feel like a lifetime, I say I'm like 80 something years old. In my experience, the different times in my life where I have felt down and very low, I haven't been able to ask for help because I didn't recognize that what I was struggling with was in any way related to depression or anything like that. I just chalked it up to everybody would feel this way if they're going through this. Similar to grief, right? You go through this process, you know, a lot of people know about the stages and you're like, I'm going through something here. But the reality is that our experiences are fueled by all this stuff that we carry. And if I'm unable to process that and really kind of be given like a little flashlight to be like, hey, this could be depression, you know, for many reasons, right? Because we may think, I could never be depressed. I could never be crazy. It takes really somebody maybe holding a mirror to yourself and saying, hey, I've noticed these things are happening. I don't know if you've noticed them. Could it be this? There's a screening tool that you can take, right?
Yeah.
That's the place where the person who you find comfort and trust with can help you look back at yourself and say, okay, I got to help you out here because you're not who I think you were 2 months ago. What's happening? And only then are you able to recognize, hopefully along that path, to be like, X thing is completely weighing me down. And nobody tells you that. Nobody tells you it's okay to go through that, you know? That's the tough part. It makes me feel like the work that we do in helping people think about all these things is really important, you know, because too often people are like, I don't know how to ask for help. I don't know what kind of help I'm supposed to provide to somebody. What does help even look like in this instance? And there are tools to help you through that, right? I know for Mental Health Month, which is in May right now, we're in Mental Health Month. We are talking about tools to thrive. That's our theme. And one of the things that we really focus on is how to support others. So there's a worksheet that people can download that kind of gives you the words to use with someone. And that's done with the intention that oftentimes we don't have the words. And you don't want to be the person that's just kind of like, well, I saw this article and this statistic and that's not helpful. That's not how you talk to your friends. It's like Mike Bros calling you and be like, what's up, brother? What's going on? Right? What's going on with you? What's going on with your life? Tell me. Yeah. And sometimes I think there are folks that are a little pushier than others.
You know, there have been people in my life who I have been a witness to this where they have been pushy. And you want to be like, I know you have every good intention. Like, I know you want to help, but you're coming on too strong.
Yeah.
You're doing it the wrong way. Your efforts are actually making it harder to help this person who needs help. And I think that's the big worry for people is they don't want to be that person. Like I was talking about with people experiencing homelessness, a lot of people are like, I want to help. I want to help. I want to help. And we don't encourage panhandlers. We don't encourage people to give money to panhandlers. We encourage giving them food or, you know, directing them to services or all of those things that we can do that will not enable a habit.
Negative behavior.
Right. Mm-hmm. But there's also that part of people say, well, do they even want my help? Is this the life that they've chosen this life? They don't want my help, you know? And so it's identifying those moments of how do you decide, well, should I help this person? Do they want my help? Yes, I am going to engage them and help. And how far am I willing to help this person?
I think that's a very valid question. There's a judgment in that, right? When you're saying like, do they even want my help? Sometimes the way that I think about it is if I was struggling, would I want help? Probably a little bit. I don't know exactly what that help would look like, but it'd be nice if somebody would even share a kind word and not place judgment. But you also have to be very cognizant of how far you can push and really what you can do. I think when you think about like the folks who may be homeless, there are so many reasons why people are homeless. But if the help that you can provide is buying a hot meal, giving them a blanket, then you've done something that hopefully, you know, will help them in the long run. But, you know, you also touched on something earlier when you were talking about like suicide, you know, and the fact that research does show that if you ask somebody, you know, are you thinking of killing yourself? It doesn't push them to actually complete suicide. It actually helps to open the door to conversation. That's, I think, relates to many of the aspects of asking the right questions. And you do not have to have a guidebook that tells you this is wrong, whatever. There are some good questions. I think where that really stems from is from you being genuine and knowing Are you really there to help because you're interested in the well-being of the person? Or are you there to help because you want to put a star on your shoulder and be like, look, I helped somebody today? For me, it's really about what can I do that will help this person move to the next step, right? Sometimes we're too blinded with our own experience and our feelings and the crap that we're just living under that we can't see beyond that. And that's where somebody's like, hey, man, let me help you. Let me figure this out with you. What does that look like? What can we do together? And that's where I think a lot of the energy can be placed, where you're really asking the question, what can you and I do together? Because it's not just you about you creating the solutions and making everything nice and pretty. Mm-hmm. That's a lot. I think it's a heavy topic. All these topics are heavy.
That's what we do, man. We're front loaders. We lift heavy things. That's our gig as organizations. That's what I love about what we do. We're on the same team, America and I, through our podcasts and through our daily work and through our organizations, talking about things. There's so much power in talking about them that once we're talking about them, then people feel more comfortable asking for help. And what I've talked about a lot during this COVID era is I think the silver lining, and I think there's a lot of silver linings to this COVID era, but one of them is I really believe that this time is we're going to look back and be like, you know, that COVID era really broke down some barriers to treatment. It made asking for help easier because everybody was experiencing anxiety. Everybody was experiencing, you know, symptoms of depression. There were so many messages. I think the media has been very responsible and very kind and spreading the word that I've seen so many. I've been a part of a lot of these mental health stories here in Oklahoma, and then I've read about them across the country and across the globe, that they're very often you will see the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number. You know, you will see Mental Health America's website. You will see all of these resources that pre-COVID you would see sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, if Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade died, you know, you saw there was that burst of like maybe a week or two where everybody was talking about the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. And then once that passed, like it was gone. But like now it seems like for 7 weeks, people have been talking about we are in isolation and we really need to take care of our mental health, because if we don't, we're going to be really bad off. So,
yeah, it's, you know, I've had several conversations with folks in the last 7 weeks, which is amazing to say, because I couldn't have fathomed that. When I looked at the calendar, I was like, what is happening right now? And the reality is, like, you know, as an organization, Mental Health America has been around for 111 years. We've been telling people we should be talking about mental health forever. And now it's like, oh, we should be talking about mental health. It's like, thank you very much. Yes, we should be, you know? And you're right. A lot of people may feel more comfortable in asking for help. I hope that they do. The fact that we're isolated, not being able to connect in ways, in the ways that really we find comfort in, makes us think about all of these things that we often take for granted. Even in this space, like, how do I ask for help? I've had to ask for help begrudgingly. Yes, I've asked for help. And I've had folks that have emailed me or have sent me a text message like, dude, I need your help. And it's like, let's figure it out. Let's figure it out together. I hope that people get, I think in terms of a silver lining, you know, this idea that we have to be able to support one another in a way that resonates with each one of our experiences, and not about this doctor that says it has to be this way. And help is very much self-defined. What that means, what that looks like for the person who's receiving and asking for help, right? Giving help. And hopefully, you know, we get something out of this, because I don't want people to struggle. I know they will. But there are resources out there. You're right. Along the lines of, you know, if you're in crisis, please reach out to somebody. You know, there is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. You can call 1-800-273-8255. That's something you can always reach out to. You also have the crisis text line, which is text-enabled support available 24/7. All you do is send MHA to 741-741. And in addition to that, there are warm lines out there. You know, for folks that don't know what a warm line is not a crisis line. It is oftentimes run by individuals who are peers, individuals with lived experience with mental illness, and they're there to just talk to you. We have information about that on our website. And if you're struggling and figuring out how to provide help, how to ask for help, check out the tools that we have for Mental Health Month. You can go to mhanational.org/May. To bring it all together, we're going to go back to this this idea of the dryer. You know, we're just tumbling there as we try to figure out how to make it all stop. I think a lot of us are always in that space. I speak for myself because I feel like I'm always just kind of going and trying to keep moving. But eventually it has to stop. Whether your quarters have run out or, you know, the cycle is over, you have to be able to figure out what do you do next. And I think that's where help is critical. And if we're able to be honest with ourselves and be able to confront whatever we're dealing with and ask for help, find the people that can do that for you. And if you're the person that's going to give help, provide support to somebody, ask what they need, man. Start from there and figure out what works for them.
Yeah. This has been such an awesome conversation, America. I really hope that your listeners understand the power of Mental Health America and what you guys stand for and what we all stand for together. Reach out for help. There's no shame in it. Do it. Your life will change. The lives of those you know and love will be changed. Ask for help.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
So we're going to sign off. And Matt, you want to sign off? We always say keep fighting in the open. So there you go.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I've been waiting for this. This is so much fun. Yes. So, America, thank you so much for having me on the show today. It's an honor. Thank you for being on the Mental Health Download. Hope people listen to that as well. And I would just tell everybody, go fight in the open.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Talk to you next time.
Yay.